Runs the controls for us, but rather than live from the Cornerstone Credit Union League building where Rick Grady works, I am from our Napa Core Solutions office in Frisco, Texas, and we're so glad to be with you this beautiful Tuesday morning here in October, and it is beautiful outside, by the way. Listen, if you want to join in on the talk with us, you can call at 646-929-1020 and press the number one key to raise your digital paw. We'll put you on the air and you can join us on Your Money, Your Matters. And looks like I've got somebody who's joining in. I'll bring them on in a minute. But anyway, we're really excited for another episode. I've got something very special I'd like to share with you in a moment. But let's see. This could be our friend Rick who's dialed in. So let's see here. Caller, you're on the air. Who's this? If you've dialed in from an 817 number, you're free to speak if you want to join us. Maybe they just want to listen in live. So anyway, so all right, well, there you go. Back in the old days of radio, I spent 13 years working at WSB in Atlanta, where I worked with one of the foremost consumer advocates in the country, Clark Howard. I loved being part of helping him syndicate his show live starting in late 1997 to where the height of his career was the number three show in the country, right behind Rush and Dr. Laura. But this takes me back, and every now and then you've got a little tattoo. But anyway, so what I want to start off talking about with you today on Your Money, Your Matters is a good friend of the show, a friend that Rick, Grady, and I have known for many years. She was a great ally, not just to Navicore Solutions, my former organization, CCCS of Greater Dallas, but the entire NFCC, the National Foundation for Credit Counseling. She was an advocate for the credit union movement, and certainly friends of Texas Credit Union League, now Cornerstone Credit Union League. She was a great, great ally to the Financial Planning Association of DFW. Her name is Pamela Yip. Pamela Yip, a longtime writer for the Dallas Morning News, passed away, sad to report, this past Sunday after a several-year battle with cancer. Pam joined us on the air on multiple occasions here on Your Money, Your Matters. But Pam is somebody that I personally have known going back 14 years. I read her back when I was still with the Clark Howard Show, and then eventually when I was doing dollar signs on CNN, because I wanted to sound smart, and I knew that she was just one of those people that didn't just get personal finance, but she knew how to write it in a way that's accessible and understandable to the everyday person, and to take very complex thoughts and concepts and bring them down to anybody could read one of her columns and really understand what was the issue. And by the way, when there were issues, she never hesitated to bring them up, to challenge others, and whether talking to me as a source for a story or a partner on a story, she was the true epitome of what we used to know as a journalist, somebody that was not writing fluff pieces, but that would investigate and would try to cut to the quintessential truths that people would need to know when it comes to their personal finances, and back to a day when the media would be used to hold people accountable, like a checks and balance system. She was all that and a bag of chips, but she was much more than that to me. Pamela Yip, I knew going back when I was living in Atlanta, and she was heavily involved with SABU, the Society of American Business Editors and Writers. And I remember meeting her in person for the first time at a SABU conference in Atlanta. And just, I was literally thrilled. If you could imagine, maybe you're here in the Dallas area and you'd say, wow, what a thrill it would be to meet Tony Romo, the quarterback of the Dallas Cowboys. Well, that to me, I was excited to meet Pamela Yip because I read her for years. I respected her. I really cared about her insights and what she had to say, what she had to share. So I remember meeting her that day, and we stayed in touch. She would call me to use me as a source or quotes on consumer stories. And then here it was late in 2007, and I found myself relocating from the NFCC member in Atlanta to the NFCC member in Dallas. And I reached out to Pam and I said, I am so excited. I'm moving down here and you and I are going to create some amazing tools for your readers, for our readership. And I had no clue what was coming next because my great friend Pam not just partnered with me on stories, but Pam was a panelist, our first ever fundraiser at CCCS of Greater Dallas, was also a town hall on financial capability that included the Federal Reserve Bank of Dallas and Elizabeth Leamy from Good Morning America. And Pam was on the panel and not just brought great credibility to our event and, of course, publicity from the morning news. But she had great insights and she asked great questions. So even though I was moderating, I felt like I have a second moderator right there because she really got things. A year later, I had her on a panel that featured a good friend of mine, Elise Flink, from WGN, CBS Market Watch, and formerly the Clark Howard Show. And the U.S. Treasurer, Rosie Rios. So it was us, the Federal Reserve, Bank of Dallas, FDIC, Judge Eric Moyer, a local judge. We had a phenomenal, phenomenal panel, and Pam was there. Pam had me to the Dallas Morning News one time to do one of their financial capability live chats. And in 2 hours, she said, at that point, she goes, nobody had ever typed more column inches in a chat than I had. And she goes, people would look at questions and they would scan them to say, well, maybe I should answer this, answer that. Let me do a research. She goes, Todd, you just took everything on the fly and responded in order to everybody because you were such a great content expert, which was a wonderful compliment to me. I said, yeah, but how many typos did I get? I probably set the record for most typos in one live chat. But that was phenomenal. I think of her helping us consider other ambassadors, leaders in financial capability for other events. One of the things I'm most proud of is that during the recession, we created not one but two financial capability tools together, and I have to say it was obviously Pam's idea because she was brilliant. Brilliant, brilliant. But she said, Todd, you're the guru, you're the credit counselor. She goes, let's come up with some quizzes that people can take to see how recession-proof their finances really are. And we made these, both of which got picked up in like 250 papers across the country. This is why I was so proud of them. But, you know, at the height of the recession, Pam was one of those people that were urging their readers, you know, yeah, it's different times, but the sky has not totally fallen. It's a changed environment, and you need to put your finances first and foremost. And so we came up with, the first one was what I call our soft assessment, and it was 30 some questions that were just yes and no, and people, and then we had a scaling, a grade scale on there, but based on the questions, it would say, how safe are you financially? And people loved it. People loved it. It was basic questions like, do you have more than $10,000 of debt, or are you behind on a mortgage? Do you get collection calls? Do you have 3 months of emergency savings put aside in case of an emergency? Because back then, you know, the biggest fear was becoming another a casualty of the faltering unemployment market, you know, that, you know, was north of 10%. And for people that lost their jobs, there was a 43% chance they were going to go at least 6 months without work. So the focus on how do you get good liquid savings put aside. Well, anyway, the quiz was a wild success, and the Dallas Morning News even made it an electronic quiz. It was available on their website, but it was republished in so many places. It was amazing that in 2009, we followed up, and we did what was a much more personalized assessment, and we measured financial capability factors, really to say how safe are you if something bad happened. Matter of fact, Pam, I'll remember it so clearly. Pam was using the Federal Reserve system was doing stress tests on the big financial institutions, and this is back in the era of what is too big to fail. But they said this is what their analysts, you know, were using to say what would happen if a bank was overrun, you know, and they, you know, how is their liquidity, you know, what would they have to fall back on? And she goes, I want to do something like that for consumers, and from that we made the essence of what I eventually started teaching as recession proofing your finances, but it was using 7 basic numbers out of your finances to say, let's come up with some risk assessments. And it measured your debt to income ratio. It measured your how much savings you had, like the length of time you could live just off of your savings alone. Then it was a length of time you could survive if you had to liquidate everything. So once the savings is gone, if you had to borrow from the value of your home, or cashing out 401ks, and living off of credit cards. Keep in mind, these were not things we would recommend, but the economy was so bad, it was a matter of what's the least painful of the bad choices. You know, somebody has no income, they have no savings, it's saying, all right, what is the next step that you take? And she helped us evaluate these factors. We put this together, and again, that one was picked up, I think, like over 300 papers across the country. I was so thrilled. I say papers, websites, all sorts of places. So wildly popular, and of course, she made it seem like I was a genius, and of course, she was the one that really made it. I gave some ideas, but she was the one that made it happen, and it was such an honor and privilege working with her. Now, I've got to tell you, my favorite story that she ever did with me was about my move from Atlanta to Dallas. And she said, you know, she goes, I think it's fascinating to contemplate the analysis you had to do of, is it worth moving your family halfway across the country? And, you know, people think about, well, is the salary leap enough to justify a move? And there was so much more to consider, whether that was cost of living, property taxes, there, you know, insurance, benefits, commute time. There was so much to consider, and we went through, and it was a phenomenal look. I thought, gosh, I could have used a story when I was considering my move. Although in seriousness, I considered quite a bit. But anyway, it was one of my favorite stories. It is my favorite story ever. And I've done a lot of media over the years, and including being in the National Enquirer 5 different times, never with an alien head over my name. But it was my favorite because they took pictures of my family, and here they've got a color shot of our family and our kids on the front of the business section, and then showing the insides of our house, which my wife at the time said, "I cannot believe you're letting somebody in our house with it looking like that." But talk about making me look like a hero with my kids. Anyway, Pam was such a bright light. As I've been posting out and sharing on Facebook and social media with some of our friends, by the way, just an incredibly, incredibly moving tribute from the Dallas Morning News. And because she'd been fighting this for a while, they had some time to really write a wonderful tribute. So I would highly recommend if you're not used to doing that, you can go to dallasnews.com. I'm going to see if I can put that up on our chat bar because, remember, Rick Grady from Cornerstone Grady and League isn't with us today, but he's the one usually behind the controls. So I'll see if I can put this up. But it chronicled her career, not just writing for the Dallas Morning News, but she also wrote for the Houston Chronicle. Just amazing the people that reached out. Well, for me personally, I'm posting up on my own social media, and I'm friends with a lot of journalists and media on my Facebook. And what was amazing, what was just absolutely amazing, is a long time the editor for the Atlanta Business Chronicle said that she was one of those bar none situations. The best personal finance writer that he'd ever had the opportunity to work with. And thank you, David Rubinger, for your comments like that. Yes, she meant so much. She meant so much. And our world's, maybe it's brighter because we've gained a star on the skies. Some people, depends on your perspective. What I'd say is, We lost a bright, bright mind when it came to personal finance. Certainly a great friend, again, of Cornerstone Credit Union League and of Navicor Solutions, of the Dallas Financial Planning Association, and so many more. And of course, the business world at large. But I know that if you are a longtime listener to Your Money, Your Matters, you probably read Pam Yip. So Pam, you are loved, and you will be missed, my friend. Kind of hard to talk about budgeting or credit or debt or housing or the stock market or anything after that. But it's an interesting thing to consider. So anyway, as I try to move forward. I look here at our screen. Let's see. It looks like we've got somebody else. Remember, if you'd like to join in, not just listen live, but join in on the conversation. And certainly you may have questions, but you may also maybe you've got a memory or something you'd like to say for Pam. I've got somebody on. I'm not certain if they want to join on the air, but from an 817 number. I'm gonna press live, and you can feel free to join in and speak. So caller, you're on the air. Who's this? If you're from a phone number that ends in 4003, and maybe they're not in a position, they may just be wanting to listen live. But I just wanted to make sure they knew that they could. I just muted just because they weren't talking, so they could join in. I don't get to see the side of the feed often, but if you'd like to join in, if you
know you read Pam. You've learned things from Pam over the years. I'd love you to dial in at any point, 646-929-1020. 646-929-1020. You can press 1. Let me know that you're there, and we'll throw you on the air. So, anyway, you know, I was thinking about, especially as I learned that my co-host, Rick Grady, the brilliant, brilliant mind, and not to mention a great leader in the city of Plano, and I live up in Collin County, but I was thinking, where would we spend after talking about our favorite memories of Pam Wyatt? And I thought, you know, what would Pam write is some of the great lessons that she would focus on in the paper in her years of journalism and personal finance, and some of the most important lessons. And I thought that would be a great way to go. You know, when Pam would call me as a source for stories, she would always ask, you know, what are the tips that we can give consumers? What are the nuggets that they can take away, they can read, and they can do something with? Especially during the recession, nothing would have been worse than saying, yes, times are still bad, and now resume living your life, you know, when your life has gone back to normal. But it was always about giving them best steps. And so one of the columns that we did, and I remember it almost felt controversial at the time, because I've worked in the credit counseling industry for 15 years, and yes, I abhor, I hate debt, and that's personal debt. That doesn't mean I don't want people taking a mortgage out or car loans, but I just mean the kind of financial noose when you leverage your lifestyle, you're buying today what you can't afford till tomorrow. So yes, credit card debt doesn't have the same application for student loan debt. I want to see people go to college, but seeing people overwhelmed and shackled to debt, it's the opposite of freedom. It prevents you from having the freedom to make choices for your life. And so I would always talk about how people can eliminate debt. So during the recession, Pam challenged, and she goes, what is more important right now? Is it more important to pay down debt or to build up savings? And I said yes, because that's the right answer, right? Neither one of those are bad choices. Matter of fact, they're both really, really solid pieces of advice, because you don't want to be stuck with debt, especially in a worst-case scenario. You lose income, you've got to pay for basic living needs like housing, transportation, utilities, food, necessary medical care. And the last thing you're probably thinking is, wow, I don't need this $18,000 of credit card debt from 3 years ago. I wish I'd paid that off. But at the same token, you've got those base living needs, and you're still going to have a mortgage the next month or a rent payment that's due. You'll still have a car payment and your insurance. You'll have to have gas for your car. You need to have fuel for your body. You got to eat. And so we went back and forth on what would be most important. And she goes, I don't want you to say both. She goes, I want you to be honest as a financial advisor. What would be more important during the recession when there was such instability and volatility? Forget the volatility of the stock market. There was volatility in the job market. And every day you're hearing about new significant layoffs, and then the monthly unemployment numbers would come out, and it would be worse and worse and worse. And you think, wow, when am I going to lose my job? When did that part happen? Which was scary, so scary. And when it came down to it, we decided, we need to have financial liquid savings to fall back on is more important even than reducing your debt. And we talked the financial aspect of this of, if you keep debt, if you keep it on your credit card, you're accruing interest and fees. You know, let's say you're on an 18% credit card, you're going to be getting that 18%, not 18% per month, but 18% per year. But if you've got a significant amount of debt, you're adding to your pile. even if you're making the minimum payment for many, this was still before Dodd-Frank Act, before CFPB, before the Credit Card Act. So people were in negative amortization situations where they were falling deeper and deeper in the hole. Yeah, pay $25. That didn't cover your interest, and your balance is growing month after month. It didn't matter because people were so paralyzed with fear over the job market. And because we had been such poor savers, for all the go-go, the good times of the economy, who was the hero? The American consumer. We were encouraged to spend, 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 and we spent until it hurts, until we had massive amounts of debt. But even then, the American consumer could not save the economy from plunging into recession, and people had significant debts, and that was the reality. And I said, you know what, the debt is problematic, but it's not the most urgent issue facing you today. What's urgent is, what would you do if you lost your job? How would you pay your mortgage? How would you pay your car payments? How would you keep up insurance? And we concluded that, especially for those with no savings, if you've got money left over at the end of the month, what your priority needs to be is, how do you start building up and bolstering your savings just in case the worst-case scenario happened? Yeah, this wasn't the cheapest thing. While other debts may be accruing, building interest and fees, we said, some people say, well, if you pay off the credit card or pay down the credit card, you could always charge those things the next month. In theory, that's true, but remember, during the beginning of the recession, the lenders were taking such significant losses. What we saw a lot of consumers do, and working at a credit counseling agency every day, saw this as a complaint. People would pay down their bill, and then their benefit, their reward for trying to be a smart consumer, is the lender or their credit card issuer would say, congratulations. We're really concerned about the economy, so thanks for paying that down. We're now reducing your limit. And by reducing your limit, no, now you've paid that debt down, but you don't have that as capacity if you had to charge your mortgage, if you had to charge a car payment. Now, certainly if you have like $10,000 or $20,000 in line and they reduce it by a few thousand, that wasn't going to harm you from that standpoint. But fringe borrowers, people that represented the pain of the recession, people with credit scores that were in the fives and low sixes, many issuers thought, great, the more they pay down, let's reduce the credit line that we make available to them, because that limits our liability as a lender. Because, you know, let's face it, there were record levels of delinquency, record levels of charge-offs, bankruptcy filings. So many were so scared, they're like, Let's reduce everything we can from a credit standpoint. So once again, if you've already charged it, paying it down doesn't mean the limit would stay. But if you paid yourself first, if you put that into your savings account at a credit union, at a bank, whatever your financial institution, you would always have that to fall back on. So there was no guarantee of your charging limit, but there's a guarantee of your savings. And we thought that was the key. And I remember that. And when I said it was controversial, because people say, as a credit counselor, you're saying it's okay to carry debt. And I said, yeah, you got it. I'm saying I wish that you didn't have the debt in the first place, but in the heat of the recession, your liquidity was more important to help you survive any form of adversity. And I remember, as Pam and I put together our recession-proofing quiz, the biggest one was really, again, doing to consumers what the Fed did to the banks. I said to consumers, like, how much money do you have to fall back on, or how much time do you have in your assets that you could fall back in case of a worst-case scenario? This is not a predictor of, is a bad thing going to happen to you? Will a worst-case scenario befall you? No. It just says, if something happened, how long would you have to survive, to get through it? And it was a great way, a great financial planning tool for consumers to look at their money and to look at their overall net worth. We often don't think about our mortgage or the equity in our home as a fallback position. And certainly we don't want to encourage people to cash out long-term savings or things like retirement. You would never want to fall back on those things, you know, during a time of crisis, a time of layoff. But there was one man who, to me, was the my face of the recession here in Dallas. He came to me very sheepishly at the credit counseling agency, and he said, Todd, he goes, here's the situation. I lost my job 5 months ago. He goes, which means 4 months ago, I missed my first mortgage payment ever. And I said, you didn't have any savings, because Todd, the savings is gone. And he goes, so I'm 4 months behind on my mortgage. I don't know if it matters, though, because I'm about $30,000, $40,000 upside down on the house. I'm thinking about walking away from it, because I hear that on TV a lot. Maybe I should just walk away, and that'll be a write-off, because I can't afford it. I can't afford the home. So the first month, I used my credit card, and then my mother-in-law offered to help us out, and he goes, so we asked mom for help, and the mother gave them like a month and a half of money to help cover their base living needs, and just for food and utilities and stuff. It didn't cover the mortgage, but just the most basic of needs. At the end of that time that money ran out, the guy said, he goes, I went back to the mother-in-law, says she couldn't do any more. He goes, and at that point, so my savings is gone. He goes, so I started living off my credit cards. And he goes, bottom line is last week I maxed out my last card. He goes, funny thing that happened, because I've been applying to open up some more cards, because I've always had good credit outside of this five-month period. He goes, but based on the snapshot of where I am, I'm getting turned down all of a sudden from all these different issuers, people that would always send me pre-approved card applications in the mail. Now they're telling me I'm not worthy. And he goes, so I come before you, he goes, because I don't know what to do. I still don't have a job. I have no savings. My credit cards are maxed out. I'm 4 months behind on my mortgage. And as if to cut me off at the knees, and he knew where I was headed, and he goes, and if you can get me through all of this, I promise that on the back end I'll start one of those 401k things, because I know that I need to be thinking long-term about my retirement as well. Holy cow. So in summary, this person came to us out of work for 5 months. Their savings is completely exhausted. Their credit cards are maxed out. They have no more borrowing power. They're upside down in their home, so they couldn't borrow from their home if they wanted to. And they did not have a penny put aside for retirement. There was no 401k. So I looked this man in the eyes, and he talked about his two young kids that he needed to get clothing for. And I said, how are you guys going to eat this weekend? And there was kind of stunned silence. And I said, I'm more concerned about you continuing with base living right now and emergency assistance. I don't care about what your credit report looks like, your credit score. I don't care about your debts. I don't care that you have no 401k. I don't care that you could be on the verge of losing your home. I care about all those things, of course, but I'm like, I care most about how are you going to get through the weekend. And he was so caught up with the finances, it did not hit him that he had no liquidity left at all. So as we did an analysis, there were some bright sides for him. We directed him as a United Way service provider to several other nonprofits that provide emergency assistance. We also realized that in the midst of the layoff, he had received a bit of a severance, which probably covered his savings for the first month. But after that, he never applied for unemployment. So even though that was not going to make him wealthy, that was going to provide money for food and for utilities and a gap. And he just laughed. He's like, wow, I completely forgot about that. I've never been unemployed. Anyway, that was the kind of scenario that Pam was trying to address, and I think it still rings true today. Here we are today in the middle of October 2015, and most people would say the economy is almost fully recovered. The job market is now less than half the unemployment rate than it was during the recession. We've seen growth, and here we're Rick and I are both out of Dallas-Fort Worth, Texas. We've seen the housing market booming. We've seen construction coming back. We've seen a surge in spending, although we still see consumers that are a bit more fearful of taking on extra debt. We saw a lot of people that liquidated and they deleveraged. They paid off some of their debts. So we've not seen consumers going back to the same borrowing levels pre-recession. That's a good thing. It may not be great for the economy, but it's great for individuals to say, you know what, I'm going to kind of rein in my spending and focus on saving. So it's a different time. You can still look at your finances today and say, what would I have to fall back on if I lost my job? This morning, I was counseling a woman a little before the radio show started. She'd just been laid off 6 days ago. She had worked at a nonprofit for 16 years, and her thank you for her service, and I would like to think it's not because of the ethics of the organization as much as the serious financial straight the organization's in. But this woman who'd been there nearly 16 years was given 4 days of severance. It said she had 4 days of vacation that were unused, and they were gifting it to her. 16 years. This is not the pensions that you used to know from the past. Obviously, we've moved away from pensions to employee-funded with sometimes employer-matched 401ks. But there used to be a time where you'd get a severance. Maybe you get a package for a week per year of service. And even for somebody who's longer and tenured, maybe they say, well, we can't afford to do 4 months, but here's 2 months, or here's a month. They gave her 4 days and said, have a nice life, which is pretty unconscionable, if you ask me, pretty heartless. And that makes me sad for multiple levels. But I said, I just want to talk about your finances right now. Thankfully, she was a good saver. She's got savings to fall back on, and she's more focused on what her next steps are for getting a job. And we walk through some of the many contacts that we share, because if you do lose a job, you certainly want to take advantage of your network. And hopefully, if you're a good networker, if you're on social media, great. If you've got, forget a Rolodex, but if your iPhone is filled with hundreds or thousands of contacts from people that you've worked with or other industries, this is the time to use them. If you're on LinkedIn, this is the time to say, I am in the market now. Somebody is going to be fortunate to find and land me. Great. But we were going through who she should be targeting, who should she reach out to, and those are important steps. And you know, it was part job search 101, especially for somebody that hadn't lost a job, had stayed in one job for 16 years. You could joke and say, well, gosh, 16 years ago, how different was the world back then? I counseled somebody last week who had been laid off after 29 years at another organization. And she told me, she goes, Todd, the last time I applied for jobs, there were no computers. She goes, well, there may have been computers. She goes, but they weren't the PCs that we know. And she said that there was no email. Forget the World Wide Web. Forget Google. Forget social media, stuff like that. She goes, there was no email. So I had to laugh, and I was just thinking, well, 29 years. I started going in my mind, because I remember it was 1984, so that was 31 years ago when I got my first, truly my PC, a PC, if you call it that. It was an Apple II City. It had a little handle on it, and it looked like and it was that kind of beige-ish white in color with a keyboard, and you plug it into a monitor. And it was like, wow, it's like a thin version of a typewriter, and you can type, and what else do you do with it? Well, I don't really know what you do, but it was a lot of fun as we looked there. So she goes, job searching has changed so much, you know, but back then, you know, it was all about making phone calls and sending resumes in the mail. And now it's all online and email and social media. And I said, yeah, so you need to be smart and take advantage of all those tools that are there. And don't lament how much times have changed. I said, just be happy with the fact that you've not had to deal with this in 29 years. So good lessons there. This other person that I talked to that has been out of work for 29 years, not having to look for a job in 29 years, she is somebody that was a bit more financially frail than the one I canceled this morning. And her husband was in between jobs as well. So she goes, Todd, we have no income coming through at all. And then I said, let's talk about your savings. And, you know, this is when you start cutting to what I really refer to as a cost of breathing budget. When something bad happens, this is not about, how do we ensure that the HBO stays on? You know, I do care more about how do we keep the electricity on? How do we keep the water on? Or how do we keep on the gas if you're in a part of the country where it's starting to get cold? You know, how do you make sure that your car does not drive away without you being repossessed because you failed to make car payments? How do we ensure that you don't join the statistics of homes that go into foreclosure back during the recession? We're at a time now when most people realize that was not fun, that was not good. You know, a house is your greatest investment, but it's also where you live, and you don't want to jeopardize these things. So we were going through and saying, how do we get just to the quintessential needs? So in her case, it was a mortgage. It was, she had no car payments, that was good. And I said, but keep in mind that you'll need gas, if only for job interviews and going to the grocery store every now and then. She goes, well, what about my son's taekwondo and other activities? And I said, you know, there's no harm in saying we're going to pause those things right now, because taekwondo is not a base living need. The electricity and the water, those are. And then she says, what about cable? And I said, I know you may think you're sitting around all day waiting for your next job and cable is going to be the most important thing, but yeah, if it's not essential, you can put those things on hold, and you can call them. You don't have to cancel the service. You can just say, listen, I'm without work, and right now I need to put these things on pause. And they would understand. They'd rather say, we'll work with you until you get your next job. Some will say, we'll give you a payment holiday to keep the services so we can bill you. we can bill you, but we'll say you don't owe us right now. I talked about the food and what their food budget was, and saying maybe this is the time to focus on healthy cooking in and not at all how often you go out. Even though you may feel you need the pick-me-up of let's go out to a restaurant or let's go have fun, this is not the time to go to movies. This is not the time to say, I want to buy some new clothes, unless you need clothes for an interview. I said, this is back to the quintessential basics: housing, transportation, utilities, food, and necessary medical care. Necessary medical care. So so we walked through that with her, and I said, now, once you have savings, I said, don't budget on what your normal monthly expenses are. Let's see how long you can make that savings last if you cut it down to a cost of breathing budget, and you cut out all the non-essentials. And she's like, well, if I do it like that, she goes, my money will stretch a lot longer. I said, exactly. That's why we do a cost of breathing budget. And I said, this is not a penalty. This is simply, this stretches out your savings as long as possible until you get back to a place of employment, you got new income coming in, and you get back on your feet. Now, what many people have seen in the job market, not just during the recession, but still today, there was a lot of wage stagnation. And so people that were thinking, well, you know, I didn't get a raise the last 5 years, so maybe this time to lose my job, I can get a pay hike. And the harsh reality is they may be looking at a shortfall. They may be taking a 20 or 30% cut in salary for their next job. It may be more than that. And what I would challenge is I'd say you need to make sure that you're earning enough to cover your locked-in liabilities as they are. So put it like this. If you are making $100,000 a year and you're in a $350,000 home, you're probably not going to be able to say, my next job position, I'm making minimum wage, and I'll still be able to keep up that mortgage or a car payment that's similar. So you need to hold out to at least make enough to cover your bills, which then brings to mind, and this was very tough during the recession, and Pam wrote about this quite a bit. What do you do? Do you accept a job? You're making 100 and you're getting an offer for 65. Do you take the bird in hand at 65 and keep looking? Do you say, I'm sorry, I can't afford this job. I'll keep looking, and then you have nothing coming in the short time. That's a rough position to be in. And many folks, they would weigh, well, what are my job skills? Is it going to be easy for me to get reemployed? Am I going to be out of work for many months or in some cases years? At which point you may say, I can't afford to be choosy, and any money I earn in the short term will be better than the none I'm bringing in right now. But I've seen other people that have flipped, and they say, I need to take the first job I get an offer for, and they say, well, I'll job hop. A couple months from now, I'll get other offers. I'll go somewhere else. And then they'll say, you know what, it's a pain to do that. I don't feel very ethical. They gave me a chance. Maybe I should give them a chance. And then what you've done is if you lock in one of those jobs where you lose 30, 40% of your income, you have put yourself back on an earning cycle in a catastrophic sort of spin. And I say this because rarely are you going to say, well, I got the job, and then next year they're going to raise me up $20,000 or $30,000 and put you back on the schedule. So now it's not just a matter of how are you able to manage your bills, but when you think about your asset building throughout the course of your life, you look at your earning potential and an ideal, even though there was great wage stagnation, and in my case, I didn't get a raise for 6 years in my former nonprofit. Well, the last 5 years plus, so I never got a raise. But it's one thing to say I'm not able to see an increase in my income and project out what that increase would mean to my 401k or 403b or paying my house off early or paying down for college costs or student loans. But you can then say, well, I'm reducing my income, which means I'm reducing my ability to asset build. So if you take that job at a decreased cost, it doesn't just impact today, but it impacts the rest of your life, because your next job may be based on this salary, not your former salary, and that changes so much. I've seen people that say they have to move sell their old home and move into a home that's more affordable, which is the right thing to do from a budgeting standpoint. But a home that if you've got two homes, let's say a $200,000 home and a $350,000 home, if they both appreciate 20% over a 3-year period, well, the home that appreciated 20%, the 350, there's more appreciation and equity build than the one that was 200. So if you find yourself downsizing on a home, well, you're not just downsizing the cost, but you're also downsizing your ability to equity build and asset build with that as well. So, and especially in a housing market, long-time listeners know I live in Frisco. I own a home in Frisco where my kids still live, even though post-divorce it's not my residence anymore. But in Frisco, Texas, it's one of the fastest-growing cities in the country, just as Plano has been and all of Collin County, McKinney, the Allen area. Property values have shot up, and I'm still relatively dumbfounded when I think about how much more the house is worth. The house that we bought moving here, that Pam did this great story about us in our move in late 2007, and what it's appraised at today. And we may be looking at a jump of $120,000. That's incredible. That says that, you know, over 8 years, you know, that's basically $15,000 a year equity position gained. And of course, it wasn't year after year it was going up like that. It stayed super flat and diminished during the recession. But now that the times are booming, you're looking like, wow, that's incredible. That really, really is incredible. So people that have downsized due to job change, job loss, change in their income stream, they downsize. They also downsize those opportunities on equity building as well. So anyway, there's a walking through the worst case scenario of a job loss and reminding people definitely you want to file for unemployment. Don't be like the person that said, oh, yeah, I forgot, because that money would have been really, really helpful to them. You know, another thing that Pam and I will talk about over the years is the importance of the credit score and how it's so much more than just getting qualified for a mortgage or a car loan or for credit cards, but how many different types of businesses are using them, how insurance companies are using credit scores to decide to price you from a risk standpoint or whether or not to even insure you. How employers are using your credit history is a way of saying if you're going to be a good, valuable employee, a productive employee, if you are going to be signify some sort of internal risk, liability of theft and fraud or not. Your credit history and your ability to manage money responsibly is infiltrated so many other levels, it's hard to comprehend not being smart and managing your money wisely. So we would always remind people the essence, the key things when it comes to credit score. And of course, since we get one free credit report per bureau per year, not one free score, but the credit report has all the ingredients that make up your score. So remember, annualcreditreport.com. You can go to get your one report per bureau per year for free, annualcreditreport.com. But the importance of monitoring your score. I love that one of my credit card issuers now just makes it part of the monthly statement. I can log in, and you can get a snapshot based on your balance, based on your payments, everything, what your credit score is that day. And remember, credit score is always in motion, and what it is one day can be very different from what it is the next week when you have maybe made purchases and you've borrowed more, or reflecting payments and how much you paid down, or if your payment was on time or late, or you've missed a cycle, or it goes from a 30 to 60 day delinquency, all those things. Your credit score is always in motion. So it's important to monitor things like that. And if you have access to free scores, take advantage of that. When people come in for counseling, like to Navicore Solutions, they'll be able to get and hear what their credit score is for free. That's an important thing to get. But basic tenets of your credit: pay your bills on time every month without exception. If you always pay your bills on time, you're one third of the way to a perfect score. Just payment history, pay your bills on time. Then that's 35%. And another 30% would be simply how much debt you have, or the inverse of how little debt you have. The less debt, the better off you are. The smaller your ratios, your utilization ratios, and the utilization ratio is what percent of your credit line are you borrowing on a monthly basis, or are you carrying as a revolving balance? So if you have a $10,000 credit line and you've got a bill of $3,400, well, you're 34% utilized, right? If you have a $5,000 credit line and you have $3,000 charged, that's a 60% utilization rate. So when you start going above 30%, using more than, you know, essentially a third of your credit, doesn't mean that you're a risk, but the closer you start moving up toward 50 and then 70 and closer toward being maxed out, there's different ratios and tiers of what that means to your credit score. So in an ideal world, you're paying off your bills on time and in full every month. So you're two-thirds of the way to a perfect score. And then you're also not ever paying any interest, and that's a beautiful thing. So anyway, love that. So other things that impact your score: your length of credit history, how long you've been managing accounts responsibly. That's important. That's 15% of your score. So age of your accounts, age of your average age, and the age of individual accounts. So don't close that 20-year-old card that you've never been late on. That's gold to your credit report. And then the other two categories are like 10% each, which includes how much credit have you applied for recently in the last year or two, and they look at inquiry over 24 months and credit applications active, where you're actively looking for credit. And no, pulling your own credit report is not an active inquiry or a pull. And then the other one is your credit mix, your diversified credit portfolio. So if you're somebody that has a couple credit cards, a mortgage, a car loan, and a student loan, that looks a lot more balanced than somebody who has 20 credit cards and nothing secured in their purse or wallet. Or somebody that has no loans, and they'll think, my credit must be perfect, because they have no debt. Well, you look good for having no debt, but you look horrible for having no loans, because now there's no credit history. And you may not be approved even for the simplest of credit cards, because they don't know how to rate you, because you don't have a bill each month to show that history. So something else I know Pam always want to encourage people is how to be smart with your credit, and if you're down, how to build that credit back up, because it does impact your cost of borrowing and your cost of living. So, well, with all that, I hope this has been informative and hopefully not too boring, since I was going solo today, but Rick Rady from Cornerstone Credit Union League will be back with us next week, and I hope you've enjoyed this retrospective on my good friend and a friend of our show, Your Money, Your Matters, Pamela Yip from the Dallas Morning News, a bright light who was taken away from us far too soon. So, Pam, Godspeed, and may you be at peace. So so this is Todd Mark from Navicore Solutions. We look forward to seeing you next week on Your Money, Your Matters. So on behalf of Navicore Solutions and Cornerstone Credit Union League, we wish you a great week. And we'll talk to you next week on Your Money, Your Matters.
Thanks in my fridge. I've got lots of lovely lira now. The Deutsche Mark's getting dearer, and my dollar bills would buy the Brooklyn Bridge.
There is nothing quite as wonderful as money. There is nothing quite as beautiful as cash. Some people say it's folly, but I'd rather have the lolly. With money you can make a splash.
There is nothing
quite as wonderful as money.
Money, money, money.
There is nothing like a newly minted pound.
Money, 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 money.
Everyone must thank her for the bookness of a banker. It's accountancy that wakes the world go round,
round, round.
You can keep your Marxist ways, for it's only just a phase, for it's money.